Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharicana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharicana. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Today, we are joined by our guest, Debbie Ann Page.
Debbie Ann Page is a public historian specializing in community and local African-American history and a professional genealogist. She is co-president and a founding member of the Richard B. Dickinson Staten Island chapter of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society, OHGS, and an appointed member of the New York City Council Task Force created to examine monuments, statues, public art, and historical markers on city-owned property. She has worked on numerous local history projects, including In Pursuit of Freedom with the Brooklyn Historical Society, Farm to City, Women of the Nation Arise, and the Access, Collaboration, and Equity in Genealogy, ACEGEN, initiative with the Staten Island Museum. She established the Lewis Napoleon House as a site with the National Park Service Underground Railroad Network to Freedom on behalf of the Sandy Ground Historical Society.
She has helped in develop an app representing Staten Island's African-American past with a modest grant from the Staten Island Arts, and most recently was a historical consultant on the recently published book, The Black Angels, The Untold Story of the Nurses Who Helped Cure Tuberculosis. Debbie Ann has also appeared as a historical interpreter on the Emmy-winning show, Secrets of New York, WITF, Towards Racial Justice, Tracing Family History, and PBS programs Metro Focus, Juneteenth, and Treasures of New York, Snug Harbor episode. She also facilitates public history forums focused on the historical perspectives of race and race relations. She holds a BS in Business Studies from Southern New Hampshire University and both a BA and MA in History from the College of Staten Island, CUNY. She is currently working towards a Doctor of Education in Community-Based Leadership at the College of Staten Island. Welcome to Speak On It, Debbie Ann Page.
Thank you for having me. It is so exciting to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes. So, Staten Island African-American history, let's talk about it. We understand that you have spent several years researching, preserving, and sharing the Staten Island's African-American history. Please share with our listeners how and why you started your research.
Well, it's interesting. I started the research, I think, because I didn't know Black people lived on Staten Island when I was young. I migrated to Staten Island from Jamaica when I was 5, and I went to school in Staten Island. In the Park Hill, I grew up in Park Hill, which is where Wu-Tang is from. But, you know, clearly I grew up before Wu-Tang got there. But, you know, with that, with all of that said, I didn't see myself in anything, right? I didn't see myself in the books. I didn't see myself in the history. No one talked about it to me. And so my parents didn't know to ask those kinds of questions. So I, you know, my husband, we got married, we left Staten Island, we traveled for 20 years with the Navy. We kind of met the monster, the beast we call genealogy. Thinking that I would never find anything about myself because I'm Caribbean. And so I decided I was going to look at my husband's family. You quickly realize that you need to find and understand the history of the locale, wherever you're looking for the people's records. And so I sat and I thought, okay, I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to understand how to do this history thing. And so I went back to school to get the BA in history. And as I was going through it, even at the College of Staten Island, no one talked about Black people. And you go, what? And by the time I got to the master's, I was like, no. every single thing that I do, every place that I go through, every person that I meet, I center in my mind African Americans within the history. That kind of started me on this trajectory of looking, because you have to look for it intentionally. The writers of our past history here on Staten Island, more specifically, had no inklings. Let me take that back. That's not what I want to say. But I want to say that the writers of the history that those hold dear, near and dear to, weren't us. There were very specific African-American historians here on Staten Island, Evelyn Morris King and Richard B. Dickinson, who they concentrated on writing the history, but it wasn't really reproducible. But I couldn't trace it down. And so that's where I step in now, to uplift their work and make it traceable, to do the historical piece to it. So that's the long way of saying I got started because of genealogy and trying to find myself in the history.
That's a great reason.
And I also like what you just said. You said making it traceable. I love that. Making history, our history, traceable.
Mm-hmm. So in preparation for this interview, we read an article where you shared that African Americans have been part of Staten Island history from its inception, including the Civil War and Revolutionary War. Please share what you discovered in terms of how far back you were able to trace African Americans in Staten Island. And for me, as a native New Yorker, we were talking about this previously, you know, Staten Island doesn't get a whole lot of love. More like you said, it's trickle down love and piecemeal love. So this is even so exciting to hear more about African American history on the island.
So in my presentations, I usually say Staten Island is the Forrest Gump of history. If you think about a time, an era, a place, a thing, Staten Islanders are there. You go, I don't understand why they're there. Just happened to be there, right? So again, doing the history, I started asking questions. Well, where are the people? How do I find them? I was doing some research on the New York State Archives website one day in their Dutch colonial records. And I said, let me do my typical search. And as I started to search and track down, I ran across a document that was transcribed that dated to 1639, 1640.
Wow.
What it was about was the colonizing of Staten Island. The Dutch West India Company sends six people to colonize Staten Island in 1639, 1640. And of those six people, one of them is called a, quote, Negro, end quote. And more than likely, he's enslaved by the Dutch West India Company because their business is about the enslavement and stolen labor. Here on the island, and they talk about him because Native Americans attacked these colonizers, and the house that they destroy and steal the quote unquote pigs or hogs from is his house. And that triggers what we as New Yorkers know as the pig wars.
Wow.
Pig wars. Wow.
Okay. That makes some sense now. We also have the quarantine station. So in 1799, the New York State Legislature says, okay, we had this outbreak of yellow fever in Lower Manhattan. It nearly wiped out everybody. What are we going to do? Let's move it 6 miles across the river to Staten Island. So they create this quarantine station where every ship, local, national, and international coming into New York, before it gets to New York Harbor proper, has to be quarantined at Staten Island anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks to make sure it's free of disease. And so it makes it rife for the ability for people who we know are using the waterways seeking freedom,
right,
can come through. And so we have documentation of these freedom seekers coming through Staten Island. One of the first books written about, you know, we call it the Underground Railroad now, but it really is just Seeking Freedom, is written by William Grimes. He's probably one of the first books
Yes.
about his harrowing story. Well, if you read through the book, you find that his stop was here at the quarantine station. And he's a little worried about it. He mentions it because it's a big deal. It's like this, you're worried about being caught here, right?
Yeah.
It also, eventually he writes like two or three iterations of this book. Finally, by the time he writes the last iteration, you know, he now is adopting the language of the Underground Railroad. And he starts to talk about his conductor from the island who, you know, who takes him in. William Lloyd Garrison writes about the same thing in 1832. The one of the first articles that's written in The Liberator has this harrowing story about a family from the Chesapeake or members of the Chesapeake. They are in a pine pitch boat. There's between 9 and 11. It's unclear. Men, women, and children, and they make their way up. There's a story where they make it to Egg Harbor, and there's a caller that comes out, and there's a man named Captain Hand who fires a shot towards them to stop them because they're going to get captured. There's a volley that's immediately fired back, pierces Captain Hand's forehead. He dies. The other person on board ship, the bullet goes through his hat, and these people get to go in. Because our people, it's harrowing.
And I was just going to say harrowing. That's exactly, yes. Wow.
Moving, they continue on. They're in and out. They're telling different stories. And where do they land? They land in Staten Island. And the article says that the last place that they were seen was with, quote, a Negro from that place making their way to the north side of the island. Meaning that they landed at the South Shore, which makes sense geographically, landed into the Sandy Ground Committee community there at the south end of the island, and then they make their way to the north where the quarantine station is and where all the ships are leaving from. Like, it just makes complete sense. And so in and out of that, African Americans have been here. You check the census that they were enslaved here. And Staten Islanders were major enslavers. I'm working on a project now that through wills. As a matter of fact, Oggs is working on the project of looking at wealth building through wills and the transitioning of Black bodies from generation to generation in building wealth. And as you see it, when slavery ended in New York in 1827, there were nearly 700 people who were still enslaved in small Staten Island, almost a quarter of its population.
My mind is blown.
Yeah.
And the stories go on and on and on, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's been here.
Wow. And have you focused at all or reviewed any Civil War records? U.S. colored troops coming out of Staten Island?
It's my thesis, my master's thesis is about the Civil War.
Wow.
Here on Staten Island is that there was anti-slavery politics that led to the Civil War draft rights here on Staten Island. Now, most of us know about the draft rights that take place in Manhattan, right?
Right, right.
But it spills over, a day after it begins in Manhattan, it spills over into Staten Island because Staten Island has a large Irish population because of the famine and the quarantine station. Many of them who were taken off those ships, they remained here. And so there is this built up animosity here between the Irish and the Black community. Excuse me. And so abolitionists are living here as well. So white abolitionists, there's an enclave in what we call West New Brighton, where Francis George Shaw, who you would know as the father of Robert Gould Shaw, the colonel for, you know, the 54th Massachusetts. He was raised here on Staten Island, and he was a part of this enclave. William George Curtis, Sidney Howard Gay, who writes the book of Fugitives, because he's a station master in New York, but he lives on Staten Island. And so there are all of these different connections to the outside world. Staten Island is a local story that impacts us nationally and internationally. I mean, we would be here a little bit hours as I'm stepping you through all of the things that have happened, but at some point the draft becomes a problem here. Staten Islanders believe that they have sent way too many people. They've had a 10-year buildup of back and forth anti-slavery politics. It's a very conservative place. It is now.
Still is, yep.
The language that they use have just flipped, but it's still, but if you use the conservative language, it kind of peters out across the board. And a lot of that fiery thing, they've used the newspapers to just to really go in, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, on the abolition community. And so the people here are already, you know, fired up and frenzied up. And so by the time the draft comes around, enough, and they target the Black community here. And I tell this story as you're standing on the wharves, because it's an island, right? You're standing on one of the wharves on the west side of the island, where it's facing Elizabeth and Bayonne. Mm-hmm. Think to yourself, you know, there are these women who are wearing these 19th century heavy clothing, and they are in such fear for their lives that they jump into the Arthur Kill and try to swim across. Many don't make it. Some are hiding. Staten Island's a very rural place at that time. So they're hiding in, you know, they're hiding on barns. They're hiding, the Presbyterian Church takes some in. There's a brewer named Kissel and a brewer named Betchel, and they take the German brewers and they take them in and they hide them, you know, they hide the population on their, you know, on their farms, so to speak. And then, you know, the newspapers here say no Negroes are hung. As long as you stay in your house, you know, nobody's hurt. But we know that we, as we look at the documents, that that's just not true. And so finally, the riots here last anywhere from 5 to 7 days, depending on, you know, the articles that you're reading. And there's a Black teacher here, because Staten Island also has a segregated, quote unquote, colored school here as well. And the principal of the teacher there, they ask him to write a thank you to all of the white benefactors who helped, you know, the African-American community during this difficult time. And his name was Thomas W. Cardozo. Of the Cardozo family. He's the brother of Francis Cardozo.
Okay, wow.
Writes this letter thanking the community. And soon after that, he leaves for, you know, we're in Reconstruction now. Mm-hmm. And so island, and he makes his way to Elizabeth City, and he is there for a while, and you can follow his story. And he actually winds up being the first superintendent of schools in Jackson, Mississippi. And so again, now we're looking at Forrest Gump of history.
Ireland, Jackson, Mississippi, Cardozo. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's a great way to compare it. Yeah. The Forrest Gump of history. I like that.
So,
and that hit close to home too for me, because I have like Mississippian, I do have family in Mississippi. So I was just like, my antenna went up when you said that. Wow. That's pretty amazing. I'm just sitting here with my mouth wide open.
I mean, so much history out of Staten Island, and living here in New Jersey for so many years, not even knowing it, knowing how vast it was until I visited. And I'm like, what? You know, to me, the way that Staten Island is portrayed sometimes is this little tiny dot, you know, and it's sitting in the water and no significant history. And then you go and you find out, oh my gosh, they've got major history and also major African-American history. Mm-hmm. So mind blown. So Debbie Ann, you make numerous presentations on the collegiate level and to grade school students. Are students surprised to learn about the discoveries and research you have uncovered? Because I'm sitting here and I'm still stunned,
Right.
so I can only imagine, for folks who haven't studied, what their response is when you make presentations.
The short answer is yes. The longer, more fleshed out answer is yeah, they're really surprised. It's really interesting because the idea is that when you know your history, when you know yourself, you move in the world differently. I say that all the time. The way you approach things, how you meet people, how you face challenges, when you know where you come from, it is a thing. And so Staten Islanders, especially children of color, especially those from the African diaspora, they don't get to hear about themselves often. I was one of those children. And when I sit with them and I walk them through these things and I connect them to things that they know, right? So that's what you do. You say, well, have you looked at this movie? And you go, yeah, I've seen that movie. You go, well, what if I tell you that Staten Islanders were there and this is who they were? And they're seized by it and they are hungry for it and they want more. We're currently working on this project with the Black nurses who helped with the cure for tuberculosis. They call them the Black Angels. And when we talk to students about it, they are very just they're just amazed. And they go, what? What? Really? And so it has become my life's journey to give to babies, our babies more specific, their history in any and every way that I can.
I love it. I love
That's
that.
beautiful. That's beautiful. Can you please share with our listeners about some of the public history projects you've worked on, specifically historical societies and the National Park Service's Underground Railroad Network to Freedom?
So, yes, thank you for that. I started out doing public history. I thought I was going to just do history and just focus on my genealogy.
Right.
I went to the Brooklyn Historical Society. They had a play. They had won like a $7 million or $4 million or however many millions of dollars grant, right? To work with, I think it was three part. It was Weeksville, the Brooklyn Historical Society, and there was an ensemble, an African-based ensemble. And I went to their they did a play, and I was just mesmerized by it. I was in graduate school at the time, and so they had a little booth set in the back, and they were like, oh, we're looking for volunteers. And I was like, I'll do it. And they were like, let's see what you've got there. And I laid out what, my resume was. And they were like, are you sure that you want to do this? We can't pay you. I said, I'm not asking for pay. Project. And her name, the project manager, was Prithi Kanakamadela. And I, she gave me the opportunity, and that set me on this trajectory to public history. And she would write me and say, the one of the ones that I talk about the most is that she says, okay, Debbie, you are a great researcher. I don't expect you to find this, but I'm just going to ask you anyway. And she says, can you find a pastor named R.S. Smith in Brooklyn who has a black church somewhere, maybe downtown? And I was like, are you serious? R.S. Smith? Really? She goes, yeah, I don't expect you to find anything. And I was like, challenge taken. And I looked at that thing for days on end and was able to say, ha ha, here,
Nice.
Reverend R.S. Smith. And that just, the feeling of accomplishment that I got from that was like, yep, that's it. This is what I'm doing. This is how I'm doing. And so that kind of started me on the process. Then I had been doing some stuff with, we had done a StoryCorps conversation at the Sandy Ground, which is the oldest continually inhabited African American community in the United States, or that's what the, you know, that's where they are in terms of the landmarking.
Mm-hmm.
So Sylvia D'Alessandro was the executive director at the time. And she was like, I'm working on this thing with the Underground Railroad. Could you help me? And I said, sure, just let me know. She says, well, just see what you can find. Well, you know, this is 2010, you know, 2009, 2010. The internet is not as robust.
Right, right.
Now, and so it was a little daunting, took me a little while, wasn't really finding anything. I saw her then in the Staples. She says, do you know anything about Louis Napoleon? And I go, the emperor? She goes, the Underground Railroad agent. I was like, what? I've never heard such a thing. And so I was like, okay, here we go. So I went down some rabbit holes. I wound up finding a gentleman by the name of Don Papson, and he had like this last little bit, this last little key. And he was a bit hesitant to give me the information because historians tend to, you know, try to hang on to their things because people will take your stuff and yeah. they will as their own.
Yeah.
And I promised to Don, and I said, Don, every time I speak about Louis Napoleon and this project in public, I will always mention your name because without him, we would have had a very difficult time making all of these connections. Well, Louis Napoleon winds up being this awesome man that now everyone is writing about Louis Napoleon, who, you know, worked for, wait a minute, Sidney Howard Gay, right? His name time and time again mentioned in this record of fugitives who, you know, they talk even in this record book is about, you know, Harriet Tubman is mentioned and he calls her a captain and he's, you know, he's has correspondence with William Still. Like these are the names that you're like you get a chill when you think about it because you know, these people are doing the work, but they're right here in our backyards.
That, you know what? Don't lose your thought, but that's it right there. History in your own backyard. And then you said this earlier, don't forget, right? You said this earlier about how, and I say this constantly, right? Everybody keeps thinking, oh, we were just in one place. We were just in one place. Or these major figures were only in one place. They weren't. And they, a lot of times I'll talk to some of my friends who are doing research and we find out about ancestors that were doing some major things to make a difference in this country. And I would say to them, and I still say it all like, I bet they knew each other. I bet my ancestor knew your ancestor. And so what you're talking about is that history, that Staten Island history and how other people that were major players to change things, right? And correct injustice or laws that were just like ridiculous, how they knew each other.
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt in that answer there, but I was like, yes, yes.
Right? As you're looking, as I look through the records, as I look through the documents, you think of these major events that are happening. Frederick Douglass is telling people, listen, it's 1845. Y'all need to not try to do that Trinidad thing. Don't go. It's a hoax. Y'all gonna get jacked up. Don't go. And you read when he's saying these things. Well, there is a minister from the AME Zion Church in the South Shore of, you know, at the Sandy Ground, AME Zion Church, that before he gets here, right before he gets here, he has to do a reverse Underground Railroad because he bought into the system. He went to Trinidad. He got jammed up there and they had to figure out how to get him back out.
Wow.
Frederick Douglass is friends with who? William Lloyd Garrison, right? Well, William Lloyd Garrison is sending his children here to Staten Island with these folks for summer vacations. And then you move on to Philly and you have the Purvises, right? And the Fortin. Right. Well, they're coming to here and Charlotte Fortin has this dreamy dream thing she's going on with Robert Gould Shaw. She's like, oh, he's so handsome. You know, in her diary. And you go, these people are all together. It's all connected. But what we What we do is we lionize these people and we put them on these pedestals, and then we think and we remove them from us. They are us. We and that when we start to understand who we are in the world as people, right? People make the history. And just because, you know, you do something famous doesn't remove the rest of us from the history if we don't.
Oh, okay. I'm sitting here trying to contain myself because William Lloyd Garrison was on fire in Connecticut at a church. Once again, we just talked about this last week, the Talcott Congregational Church, which is where my ancestors were out of. And Hartford, Connecticut was called the cradle of liberty for Black people or African-American people at the time, right? And so they weren't just in Hartford, Connecticut. So now I'm finding out, and I'm learning something new tonight. What? William Lloyd Garrison was in Staten Island as well. And just what
Wow.
you said, like, we have all these people at the top, but we forget about, we don't always focus, but here we come focusing on them, right? The folks that helped them do what they were doing. Like, maybe there were some places that William Lloyd Garrison could go to that Frederick Douglass couldn't. And so I have a book that I'm reading now that they were friends. William Lloyd Garrison and Frederick Douglass were friends. And there were other people. There were so many other people that the descendants are researching and learning about, right? Like, you're working on a public history project, right? We're all starting to go, look, wait, I saw this name before. I saw that name before. We just had our Ox meeting, and I shared how I went to the Library of Virginia and how the Library of Virginia has a whole collection on my ancestors. And now I'm sitting here going, you talk about the AME Zion Church, Benjamin McKnight Brawley, and his father, rather, was Edward McKnight Brawley. His son was Benjamin Brawley. And they were like movers and shakers in the AME Zion Church to make a difference in this country, not just in one place. So, okay, I'll stop there. Okay. Ooh, okay. All right. Yes. Yes.
One more story that I love to tell. It in the 1840s, 50s, there's this thing, the 1st of August celebrations. I don't know if you've heard of them, but what they are is that when the Caribbean emancipated their enslaved peoples, they started these celebrations because it was done August 1st, 1834. They had an apprenticeship program. By 1838, everyone was free. They paid reparations to the white enslavers, and then they, you know, everyone's in the United States began the celebration saying that we're going to celebrate until everybody's free. Well, in 1855, there was one of the largest 1st of August celebrations to take place in the nation that happens here in Staten Island. Alexander Crummell is organizing it. Now imagine this. You've got these African-American abolitionists, and they're like, we're going to do this. They've gathered now, by estimates, 5,000 people, and they're taking the ferries across from Brooklyn, and they're taking the ferries from Manhattan, and they're coming from New Jersey. And when they get off the ferries, the fife and drums start, and they're blowing. And they're drumming, and they are walking down the street, and they are walking in a, they're marching towards what we call the Clifton Pagoda. And when they get there, they have Stephen Myers, the Underground Railroad conductor from Albany, is their keynoter. And so he's doing this keynote, and he's like, yeah, and another thing, and here you go, and this is what's going to happen, and you take that, and you listen to this, and here's something else for you. And so this is the biggest celebration ever. Then there's a smaller celebration that takes place in Brooklyn, and they call it Long Island, where maybe 700 people go. All of the white abolitionists from Staten Island attend that, with William Lloyd Garrison, Sidney Howard Gay, they all go there. But the Black people, the people who are looking and understanding their own freedoms, they're here in Staten Island celebrating together.
How exciting.
What's his name? Community Park. James McEwen Smith is outdone because he's like, How you gonna go over there? We're from Staten Island, and you're gonna go over there to Brooklyn while we're celebrating here? And he writes about it in Frederick Douglass's paper. And he is like, here, take this, take another thing, here you go. And these are the stories, when you think about them, are they're so connected. And
Yes.
they're doing this thing. Freedom is on everyone's mind, but Black people are doing it different, right? We're doing it, and we're doing it for ourselves. These are the things that you understand and recognize, that it's not some white savior coming and saying, okay, Black people, come on, get up now, y'all have to be free.
Right.
This is how you understand we're doing it for ourselves.
Listen, I'm on. Okay. So I was doing some research again, Hartford, Connecticut. They had one of those celebrations. And I was confused because I was like, wait, what are they talking about? But this one was specifically, it said, people from the West Indies. And I'm reading about it, and I'm like, what? How? And again, things that you were never taught. And unless you read, like with history now, whenever I'm researching something, I just try to have an open mind, because I'll come across one thing, like I'm supposed to be working on this, and I'm looking, I'm going, wait a minute, what are these celebrations that they're talking about, right? And it was like, wow. And I have the newspaper articles where they had the celebrations in Hartford, Connecticut. And it was something else that you mentioned. All right, so the celebrations. Oh, and then I'm reading and I'm like, the Black governors. Talking about Black governors. So in Connecticut, the community would select certain people to be in charge. That's who they went to if there was an issue, whatever. And there are about 12 of them. If you look it up, Black governors in Connecticut, I'm going, I never heard of, like, there's so much. Once again, researching one thing and then ending up somewhere. And so to our listeners, look up Black governors in Connecticut. You'll learn something. Very, very interesting.
And both of you mentioning the celebration with the connection to the West Indies, that reminds me of a time I was in Philadelphia, and I have to look at the marker again. Philadelphia is full of like historical markers, but they did this. There was some reference to like a parade or something about commemorating West Indian independence, and I think it was specific. I want to say it was specific to Jamaica, but I'm not sure. So I'm wondering if maybe that was probably
It
the
is.
same
Yes.
celebration. So
Yeah,
look
but the
at
same thing, Terracotta. I'm reading and I'm going, wait a minute. Okay, well, what are they talking about? But it was
that.
specifically towards people from the West Indies, that they were celebrating their independence or their freedom. I'm like, okay, I'm so confused. Wait a minute, how did I get here?
So this was a
So,
thing. This was a
yes.
thing.
There's
Wow.
two books written about it. I don't have the author's names in front of me right now, but if you do a search for First of August celebrations, these two books will come up, and they're
Okay.
fabulous. Will give you the story, and they were taking place all over the place. Like Black people, like, yeah, this is a thing. This is gonna happen.
Okay, First of August celebration. Noted. And to our listeners, yes,
Yeah.
please research
Oh,
that.
wow. Okay, so Debbie Ann, technology is starting to play a major role in history projects and sharing information. We were so excited to learn how much you love technology. Please share a little about an app that you recently created with another researcher, the Staten Island African American Heritage Tour app, that I was like, wow, just wow. Okay.
Yes, thank you for that too. So yeah, people, as I did research, and presentations across the island, people were really hungry, thirsty, needing and wanting more, and they would say, "When, girl, when you gonna write that book?" I don't have time to write a book, and
Who
people
can
aren't
relate?
books like that anymore. I said, "But I'm gonna figure something out." And I had this idea in my head for years and years and years that I would create an app where you could kind of do a tour, like you could go to a stop and find out some stuff about it. And so I applied for this really small grant with the Staten Island Arts, and they were like, yeah. And I started this project, and I was working. So my other life was as a senior policy analyst with the Council of State Governments, and I did, I worked with state government on a lot of things. I did a lot of traveling, and so it was a little hard to get it all together. And so I went to a friend who I said, listen, can you help me with this? And her name is Faith D'Alessandro, no relation to Sylvia.
Okay.
But Faith was like, of course I'll help. And so she became my project manager. And she was fantastic because we used Trello and we dropped everything in this board and she moved things around. She was like, this is your strip right here. You need to answer this, answer this, answer this, get this for me, get that for me. And then she took all of those things and she was able to input all of it into the app itself. And so I could it, if you look at the app, it is my brain thrown into technology. Like I had been harboring all of these different pieces from a lot of places, and this just kind of put it all together so that when you're looking at people or you're looking for things about Staten Island's African American past, things like, World War II soldiers, right? And the black wax and, the Underground Railroad or just Bill Richmond, the first boxer, he's from here. So there's all these different pieces that you can go to this place and say, okay, this is a place for me to start. It's almost like a black Wikipedia, right? I've pulled links in from different places, even Wikipedia, to throw it in here to say, here's where you can find some more stuff about it. There's a lot of primary source documents in there, a lot of newspaper clippings, photos. We even have a audio of Mamie Smith singing one of her blues songs because she's buried here at Frederick Douglass Memorial Park. And so we have,
Oh.
we're buried in Frederick Douglass as well. The Attica uprisings, there were several bodies that no one would take them. And so they wound up in the cover of night, bringing them here to Staten Island and burying them at Frederick Douglass. And so all of these things you can find in the app. There's probably, I want to say between 120, there's about 120 entries currently. There's another 50 to 60 that I need to add, but once I finish this dissertation, I can go back to my life
Oh,
on hold for now. But even with it being on hold, because I'm so excited about putting these new things that I found into it, there's a lot
yeah.
of in there already.
That is super cool. That is super, super cool. And I totally like we hear that a lot, I think, for those of us in this history and genealogy space, when something is like a research project kind of becomes your baby and you share the information and people are like really enthusiastic about it and they're like, where's the book? Where's the book? And I get it. Like I feel you on that. Like I don't have the time right now. But an app, that's a great alternative. That makes a lot of sense. And that is really cool. You're just
And
full of
you're,
cool stuff.
I know, right? And she's probably inspiring a lot of people. I know I'm inspired.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Now, what's the app? Now, what is Trello? Okay. I don't know. And maybe we can help our listeners with that.
Trello is a work project management app.
Okay.
It's T-R-E-L-L-O, and maybe they'll pay me a little bit for the endorsement later.
Good to know.
But it is a really good project management. It's easy. It's simple for those who don't have a lot of skill,
Right.
with technology. Drop and drag, move and poof, and those kinds of things. And so, and it's very visual. It's a storyboard across a lot of different places, and so it's very easy to use. And there's even a there's a Facebook group called Genealogy and Trello on Facebook
Oh,
that
wow.
they kind of help you along in how to use this board
Right.
in organizing and managing your genealogy.
Excellent. That is excellent and great to know. Yeah, no, I'm taking mental notes as well. So you touched on this earlier, but regarding your own genealogical research, what's your personal family connection to Staten Island?
So, I don't have, well, let me take that back before I misspeak, right?
Okay.
Husband has a connection to Staten Island.
Okay.
He's a Great Migration Staten Islander. So his people came up from North Carolina in the 1920s.
Okay.
Just, it kind of at that thick point of the Great Migration, and he lands here in Staten Island. And so, he didn't know a lot about his family either. And so I'm able to take them back. I'm able to bring them forward to the present, but yet take them back to North Carolina where they came from. It's interesting. As a part of this OGS project on wills and wealth, I was doing some doing some of the research, and I was going to do a presentation for our chapter. And it's really funny because the former council member Debbie Rose, she her I know her family's from Northeast North Carolina. They're from Elizabeth City, and her paternal family's name is Billups. And I'm like, you know, Debbie, we 20 years ago, I said, Debbie, you guys have got to be family. Stop playing, right? To what she was saying, right? I said, y'all got to be family. And one morning I was tapped, and you all know what I mean by tapped, up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I start to do this writing, and it says, look at this. And I started to look at Debbie's family, and I said, I know this name. And so as I started to trace her family back in the newspapers, because her family was the funeral director, her grandfather was a funeral director here. And as I family back to Northeast North Carolina, I go, here we go. And I put it in a presentation and I sent it to her and I said, Debbie, look at this. I said, look at the 1880 census. Do you see that line here with Luke Billups? She said, yes. I said, that is your fourth great grandfather. She goes, what? I go, yeah. And this is the record, because I had a record, and this is the record of his enslavement. And she cried and she said, thank you so much for doing this. And I said, now you see I've highlighted him in yellow right there? She says, yeah. I said, you see that family right above there that's highlighted in pink? She said, yeah. Said, that's Ernie's family. And they're Billups's as well. And so there were only three Billups families that were in that part of Pequimmins County, North Carolina. And it's Pequimmins County, North Carolina. Come on, people, let's real, right? Let's able to put the two of them together, that at the very least their people were enslaved around the same place, so they are still family, whether it is biological or through.
Yeah.
That's my
And
connection.
wow.
this is why, when I talk to people and they are slightly interested in genealogy and they live, say, in the North, New Jersey, I'm like, so where's your family from? They'll say someplace, say Newark, New Jersey, or Philadelphia. I'm like, no. Where did they come from before they ended up there? Oh, well, I'm not sure. Okay, wait a minute. South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia. And so that encourage them when you're doing the research. Don't just look at, oh, well, I'm only looking at Philadelphia. Oh, I'm only looking at New Jersey. In most instances, they were from the South, or they may have been from the islands. I have a cousin who lives in Long Island, and we talked for years and very, very close and everything. And then she comes out one day and says to me, well, yeah, my great grandfather was from the Bahamas, and they built their own boat, and came into Florida. And I'm sitting there looking at her going, you told me things like, well, you never asked. And so the surname is Pender, Pinder, and any Pender that you can think of, most of them are from the Bahamas, very prominent in the Bahamas. A lot of them are in Florida and New York. I wanted to pinch her. Like, wow. But they built their own boat and went left the Bahamas and came in to I want to say the Miami area. And there's documentation online of them coming from the Bahamas. Like, they had to go check in or whatever it was. And I'm sitting there like, do you understand what you? It always amazes me when people that are not interested, like, they just think that's a big deal. Yes, it's a big deal. It really is. So, oh gosh.
Also, so you don't hear a lot about when we talk about the Great Migration up north. Yeah, we hear about New York City, but you specifically don't hear about Staten Island, people going to Staten Island. It's usually maybe to Harlem, maybe to the Bronx, a few to Brooklyn, but you don't hear a lot about Staten Island. So that was Also very cool to hear that your husband has that genealogical migration pattern.
And I'm working, it's a part of my dissertation project.
Oh, very cool.
A community-based project about Park Hill and the transitioning of peoples through this particular community. And it's a fascinating thing because, again, it has, we have to look at the people,
Right.
and we often forget that sometimes.
Well, I can tell that there's going to be a part two with Debbie Ann Page. Once everything
And
is done, you're going to have to fit us in.
15 other cool things she's doing at the
No, right? Oh my gosh. Follow up to the follow up.
right.
So, Debbie Ann, oh gosh, I don't want this to end. What are some parting words you'd like to share with our listeners? Inspiration, whatever's on your heart to share. And I'm just sitting here like, wow, I am full. And I honestly don't want this to end, but okay. Okay.
If I had to say something to my people, I would say, history is us. Please remember that. We make the history. When we look at people like Frederick Douglass, and he has his children, well, his children have friends. And we live together. And it's important to know who you are and where you come from. So when you connect the history is us and where we come from, that makes us well-rounded, and it serves us because we now have purpose.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Oh my
Debbie.
gosh, so much fun.
Yes. And I learned so much. I mean, I learned a lot on all, our podcasts, on our episodes, interviewing so many dynamic guests. And, this is just another podcast, another learning lesson for me. Debbie Ann, thank you so much for sharing with us and our listeners. Let our listeners know where they can find out more about you and projects you have or you're working on.
I'm working on getting my website back
All
up.
right.
It's called pageoneassist.com. You can also find me on Facebook at Page One Assist or Debbie Ann Page, either one. I avoid the other X one now, and I'm not necessarily on Instagram yet, just because it's so time consuming. But those are the two biggest places. And please check out the app. It's free. And it's at Staten Island African American History Tour or Staten Island AFRAM History.org, dot story dot app. I think they've changed the web address.
Awesome. Awesome. And that's Paige for our listeners with an I, PAIGE.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you.